Live from the Business Radio X studio inside Renaissance Bank, the bank that specializes in understanding you. It's time for North Fulton Business Radio.
And hello again, folks. It's John Ray here on North Fulton Business Radio. Thanks for being with us and welcome to yet another edition. I think we're up to number 205 or something like that. But anyway, we're delighted you're with us. And we are coming to you virtually here in Alpharetta. We're not in Renaissance Bank right now, but we're coming to you virtually and continue to try to get the good word out on great business owners in our area. Folks, today you are connected more than ever, whether it's your friends, your family, or your life. Renaissance understands how you bank. They've got mobile banking services, and they've got offices that you, where you can speak to real people with real answers. You cannot go in those offices right now without an appointment, so call ahead, get an appointment, but you can go through the drive-through at any time. So check out Renaissance. You can go to renaissancebank.com for all the updates that they have for their 190 convenient locations throughout the South. So check them out. They're great folks. Renaissance Bank, understanding you, member FDIC. Now I want to welcome Paul Knowlton. Paul is the founder and attorney with Uber Counsel. Paul, welcome.
John, good morning. What a pleasure to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. It's great to have you here. You have got a fascinating background that I wish you would share some highlights with our audience.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. I will. I have the good fortune of starting out in the construction field almost out of high school, and that led me to college later on and graduated as an engineer. Worked a good number of years in construction as a construction superintendent and project manager. Finally, wound up working with Georgia Pacific as a forensic engineer. Sort of think of construction CSI, you know, something goes wrong. How does it get fixed? Or what went wrong and what do we do? Wound up meeting a lot of lawyers out there on the construction site when they're trying to figure out who to sue, right? and I thought, well, you know, they got me outgunned and they got me outclassed. I need to go to law school to figure out what they know that I don't. As I come to find out about midway through my first year at law school, they don't know more than I did. In fact, they were afraid of me. I was the construction expert, right?
Sure.
I'm in law school and I'm moving forward. I assumed I would go right into construction law because I know the business. I know the work. I've been in that world for some time now and been successful at it. But it turns out intellectual property was real hot in early 2000s, about the time the internet was so bubbling up. And everyone directed me over to intellectual property. So with an engineering background, I wound up graduating law school and working in intellectual property work. So patent, trademark, copyright, that kind of work. And I enjoy the law. I enjoy the law a lot. What was interesting, though, for me is as busy as I was as an attorney, I've got this passion for family. I've got passion for family in crisis. I have a passion for journeying with family and helping them get to the next spot, because if anything is universal, it's family, right? Good, bad, or just difficult, whatever.
Sure.
It looks like, you know, family is it for us. So I've had so much pro bono work, doing divorces, foreclosures, adoptions, immigration, you sort of name it, right? And there sort of came a point where I had to sort of maybe give up the hobby or move into the hobby. And so the work that Uber Counsel is focused on is what I'm calling family care. So family care, family law, the phrase family law is already kind of taken, right? As a sort of a nomenclature for divorce.
Sure.
Phrase came up with a long time ago to have a better phrase for families breaking apart. So family law is taken, but family care, you know, how do we nurture families? How do we strengthen families? And how do we strengthen each other on the journey, whether that's that is family? And then also so many of us are small business owners. Those are extensions of us and our families. So I've brought all those skill sets together here in Uber Council. Now, one thing I left off is there on the journey, I wanted to develop soft skills, right? Like how to be a better or more empathetic problem solver. So I about 15 years into my practice, I started a Master of Divinity program here at Mercer University. They've got this, I had no visions of going directly to ministry, but they have this pastoral care and counseling program. And there, we took a lot of counseling, therapeutic counseling classes, active reflective listening, these ways to connect with people. And I wanted to do that because often my clients, I meet in times of crisis, right? I meet them when they're struggling to figure something out or just problem solve. But there's always emotion and feeling behind that. In law school, you're taught to put that in a separate box and set that aside. But really, that's what motivates our people, motivates us.
Sure, sure.
So you need to figure out, I want to figure out how to work with that. So I think if you look at my resume, it's like, wow, when will this guy grow up, right? When will he stop? When will he settle down? But that's not the case. We're meant to grow. We're meant to mature and meant to just go further, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Paul, a lot there. I want to, I guess, dive into something you're pretty transparent about, which is your own background and really how that informs how you look at what you do today, because you're admirably awfully transparent about what led you to your journey.
I am now, not used to be, but I am now. So, I'm the oldest of five kids. Mom is an immigrant from Cuba. She arrived in the country you know, decades ago. Dad is a federally convicted, felon. He that was his background. So we had a little bit of maybe a mismatch up there in their marriage. You know, unfortunately, Dad was he was dangerously handsome in a Don Draper kind of way, and Mom was she was very attractive, so I could see why they were attracted to each other. But they had a hard start getting going. The families didn't approve of the marriage, and they had five kids pretty quickly. So when our family ran into crisis, neither side of the family wanted to help out or decided they couldn't help out. And so we wound up in foster care, the five siblings. So I know that desperate and soul scorching crisis of family being torn apart. We were apart for about 10 years while the siblings were apart. We did come back home. We've got a wonderful story of restoration, redemption, and family being reunited. And my siblings and I are as strong as, I'll use the air quotes, normal family,
Right.
And I am absolutely proud of each one of them. And we have worked hard to bring that, our family back together again.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, we're enjoying family. I've got nieces and nephews. I've got a wonderful daughter myself. It's all has worked. Not without bumps in the road, not without mishaps. But when I meet with a client now, whether that's a family law client, if that's someone who wants some pastoral counseling, somebody who's in professional development or coaching, I don't know exactly where they are, but I got a pretty good feeling where they are, just having lived through these kinds of challenges.
Yeah, that's awesome, and it's as we were talking about before we came on the air. And people are looking for real stories that they can connect with, and you offer that, and that's really impactful, I think.
So it's a story I've run from for years, John. You might understand.
Sure, of course.
Story of a family. You can look at it very critically as a family in failure. Why did this immigrant marry this convict? Don't they know better? What were they thinking? Why have kids 5 kids within 6 years. You know, it's lots of reasons why I ought to not have done something. Mm-hmm. But when you realize that, you know, we're all on journeys and we've all got some suffering that we've experienced, no matter who we are and how good it looks on the outside. I'm wearing a very nice suit right now. Things look very good for, you know, from the outside. But it has been a journey that I was made aware that I need to share. And it really, I guess that was part of the divinity program there in seminary. People, when I opened up about this story in a pastoral care experience, people were just sort of, you know, stunned silent. And for me, stunned silent as a kid was always rejection, right? You just needed to now be quiet and disappear. Mm-hmm. I think they were just so surprised that I had that background that they really encouraged me to start being transparent about that. Spoke to my siblings and parents about being transparent about this experience and how it might benefit others, and they were supportive. So I've been less shy about hiding that story. And I found that it resonates with people who are somewhere in their journey struggling. And they can see that there's a better outcome on the other side often.
Yeah. And there's an example in that you provide for all of us in whatever our, wherever we are in our own journeys, but certainly for your clients in family law that, as you say, are going through very stressful, traumatic, heart-rending times. I think you said soul-scorching times. That's such an appropriate term. You provide quite an example, because that's offering that up is some way is healing in some way, right?
I have found it to be healing, and it's, I'd never make, of course, my clients' issues about me.
Sure.
It's when the time's appropriate, right? It's when you're counseling someone, you know, it's time to take a little bit of a step forward, test the water, see if they're receptive to reaching out in an empathetic way. And I have counseled clients that were sure and determined that they were going to get a divorce, and years later they're still married because they just needed to work through what was their fear, why were they really at each other's throats. It probably had little to do with the relationship. It had more to do with outside stressors. You know, in law school, unfortunately, and there's reasons for it, but we're taught to keep clients at a distance, right? We've sort of got to keep them at arm's length emotionally, and not dive too deeply into what some feelings or motivations are, and stay focused on the legal aspects. But you can't slice and dice people that way. We come in as a whole package. Some of it's neat, some of it's messy. And so when a client recognizes that, oh, you know, your lawyer's been through some journeys too, and they can empathize, then they're willing to open up a little bit more. And what's neat about this is when they open up a little bit with their feelings, then, and here's a strategy I use, I connect feelings to needs and then needs to strategies. Mm. I don't start with strategies. So often we want to jump right to strategy. What's the solution? What I want this, I want that, I want the house. He can have the damn car. I don't care.
Right.
The strategy. But does the strategy really fit the need? No, the strategy is usually out of anger. If we drop back, figure out what's the feeling, connect the feeling with the need, then the need drives the strategy. And because that's healing. That's a healing approach. Otherwise, you're just paying lawyers to beat up on each other, which, you know, even we get tired of doing after a while.
So, a lot there. But so let's go at this one way. Sure. I'm curious as to was this in a way you were engaging in your practice, your law practice, before you got your divinity degree, or did that really was that something that getting that, was that experience of going through that something that brought on this way of working with clients? I mean, how did that work for you?
You know, I very much stumbled in my early years trying to connect with people in a way that was helpful. Always have been fortunately very successful on the legal practice side. So with results, building business, having clients, always more satisfied, you know, when they leave than when I met them. I think on the pro bono side early on, I was a little bit more clumsy. So I was you sort of have the white knight syndrome, right? You want to go in and help somebody.
Sure.
And if you wind up doing more work than they're doing, then you're not helping, you're not teaching the fish, right? You just feed them for a minute. So even though those results were okay, I wanted a more of a sustainable model. And that's why I started in this program, because it was, you know, counseling was involved and getting upstream of the issues were involved. So the MDiv really helped me clarify how to contextualize somebody's feelings and how to lead those feelings towards solutions, helping them lead and find their own solution. So the program was wonderful. I wish, it's 3 years, it's full time, 90 credit hours, just like law school. And in a way, it's a different kind of law, right? It's a different way of dealing with creative problem solving. For me, the joy, the unexpected joy, has been able to integrate these two parts of me. So rather than keep them in separate categories, right, where I wear a lawyer hat 1 minute and a counselor hat the next minute, I want to bring these together because the client arrives as a whole person. They don't arrive in pieces.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So does that make sense?
No, that makes perfect sense. Folks, if you just joined us, we're speaking with Paul Knowlton, and Paul is founder, attorney, counselor, both legal and personal, right? For Uber Counsel, his own firm. Paul, when folks come to you for family law, they're angry and frustrated a lot of times. And, I would imagine for some clients, you're not really that attractive because you're trying to get them off their anger and they don't really want to get off their anger, right? Because they're mad and understandably so, maybe, depending on what the circumstances are about what's happened in their lives.
Absolutely. And they may not be able to reconcile.
You know, right.
I'm not trying to divorce. Sometimes is the right solution for people. I'm not trying to absolutely save the marriage or insist anything like that. I just help them figure out with more clarity, is this really the road you want to go down or are there other options? If it's the road they want to go down, I've had some training, I've done the training for a method of divorce called collaborative law. So collaborative law, the intent there is have the parties sit down with their lawyers. The couple are represented by lawyers, but there's a four-way agreement. And the agreement is we're going to settle this matter and we're not going to litigate. Mm. We're going to get to a solution that is satisfactory to everybody. If we can't, now, because litigation is always available, and it is a method of solving disputes, right? But we collaborate, we try to work a solution that's best for everyone, causes the least amount of damage, and then we come up with our settlement agreement. If litigation's, if we've got to go that route, the attorneys will withdraw. So you see, the attorneys don't have a motivation to drive litigation. We don't have a motivation to drag this out.
Right.
That method's got some critics, of course, as you can imagine.
Sure.
But it leads to a solution that might be more healing. I mean, people considering a divorce, considering their family, you know, dissolving the way they know it, they're angry, to your point, but you can create a whole lot more anger in that litigation process, right? You can just, when you say some things, you just cannot unsay them. So if we can make that process go a little gentler, I think that's what a lot of us in the family law area are trying to do. Mm-hmm. And that's what that collaborative is about. Some folks, they need to get divorced. I mean, you know, family violence issues. You can't just try to save that marriage. Typically, it's that somebody's in jeopardy. They need to get out. So there's the neat thing about it is we need to start thinking, and many of us do start thinking expansively. What's, you know, there's just not one hammer in the toolbox, right? There's a lot of different tools. Sometimes a screwdriver is all you need to tweak something. Sometimes you need a sledgehammer because you got to take down a bigger bully.
And regardless of whether you get a divorce or you don't get a divorce, regardless of what your circumstances are, the ultimate goal is to recover, right? It's to heal in some form or fashion and get over that anger.
Exactly right. Unfortunately, I was divorced. I am divorced. So been remarried and happily married for almost 25 years now. But I was married very young. Circling back to that foster care story, you know, my vision growing up as a kid was, I'm going to have the perfect family one day. I am just going to be out of the situation I'm in. Life is going to be great. So, you know, I married very early, and we were married about 11 or 12 years, and she decided she didn't want to be married anymore. So talk about my world doubly shattered. I have that experience of knowing what that's like, being divorced, and it takes some time, mentally, emotionally, financially, spiritually to heal from that. Wound up marrying, cautiously. I was a little nervous, but about 5 years later, remarried, and it has been just a wonderful journey since. There is absolutely healing on the other side.
Great story from Paul Knowlton, and Paul is the founder, attorney of Uber Counsel. Paul, you, we've talked a lot about family law. You've got a pretty awesome background in business related law. You were at Kilpatrick Stockton, which is a well-known firm, and still work with business clients. There are a lot of issues, and certainly we can point to them today with what's the chaos that's going on today. A lot of issues that are really spiritual in owning your own business and working with your employees, particularly during stressful times.
John, that's a really insightful observation. You're right. I find spirituality to be a part of our, obviously our personal lives, but our business lives as well. And by spirituality, I don't mean a faith tradition necessarily, right? We have faith traditions, we all do, and that's good. For me, the spiritual journey is that search for the internal trust and strength that leads us to fulfillment and engagement in our lives. It's this turning inwardly. One of the struggles right now, I mean, today with the coronavirus lockdown, is that we're, you know, a lot of us are anxious and tense because we're not used to being with ourselves. You know, we're used to being busy. We're used to being distracted. This is a painful time right now for so many people in a lot of different levels, particularly anxiety about the future. What is cash flow going to look like in our businesses? How am I going to recover? How am I going to get my clients back, my customers back? So there are a lot of stressful factors happening right now. For those who can, this is a good time for reflection and for searching. Are they where they need to be in their lives? Is the business an extension of their best selves? But we all get it. We all learn first thing out of the gate as a business person. Okay, first thing, my first responsibility is to maximize profits, right? It goes back to Milton Friedman in the 1970s. That was the one social responsibility of an organization, to maximize profit. Well, what if it's not? Well, what if we absolutely have to have profit? I'm not stepping back from that. but does it have to be the only thing that we have to squeeze out of ourselves and our people? Can we have, what's in, you know, Don Bogle, the founder of Vanguard, would ask, you know, would say, well, what's enough? Where are we when we have enough? And that's, you know, if we look through the spiritual lens, I think that's maybe what this pandemic might be teaching us right now. If we want to take a look at that, it's, we don't like pain. We don't like looking at pain or suffering, but maybe that's part of what this is teaching us right now, is what's enough? What do you really need? What is our new normal going to look like? Is it going to be back to the old busyness, or is it something more empathetic and something a little bit more compassionate with each other? That's a challenge for us now.
You know, you touched on something there that I thought was really appropriate, and I really perked up when you said that. When you talked about when you squeeze profit out, you know, a lot of folks think squeezing profit out is about squeezing their employees, and it is, but you're squeezing yourself at the same time, or you're squeezing the business at the same time, or your business partners at the same time, right? I mean, there's more to it than what it appears, and it can be really damaging without you realizing what you're doing.
Very insightful, John. You're absolutely right. So theologically, right, if I can take a step for a second, in the Judeo-Christian tradition, we've got the story of Moses, right? We've always read that story as Moses freeing the slaves, right? And that's how the story goes. But someone who needed to be freed as well is Pharaoh. Pharaoh was driven by this passion for empire building. He had to have all the pharaohs throughout the times. So they needed to create these monuments to themselves. And that caused a lot of stress for him as well. Yeah, and that's metaphorically him. But us in our businesses, if we have, and I've been on both sides of this equation. I've been on the side where, you know, if I'm not growing, I'm dying. We've heard that phrase, right?
Right, again and again, yeah.
Again and again. And so that's, I think, in critical thinking language, we'd call that a false dilemma. No, you know, think about a person and eating food. Am I going to eat all my food January 1st in the new year, you know, that I would normally spread out throughout the whole year? I'm not going to do that. I'm going to pace myself, you know. So we need to and can pace ourselves in our businesses. I need to make a profit. There's no question. I have bills. I've got to show, you know, a profit at the end of the day. And my wife likes to see a profit at the end of the day, and I appreciate that in her. But I am going to focus on, giving my clients such extraordinary service and such, I can never guarantee a result, but just the absolute best result I can possibly get out of them. And then I've got a marketer for life. I don't have to make more money to spend it on marketing to get the word out. I've got somebody who's going to do that. And I can't buy that stuff. You know, better I should sleep, try to get my 8 hours of sleep. I don't, but better I should try to get a good night's rest and take care of myself, because if I'm not healthy, healthy enough to do my work, it doesn't matter how much money I make, right? We trade our health in for our money, and then we wind up trading our money in for our health. How crazy is that? You know, we got to balance it.
This is great. I mean, I could go on and on, but I want to talk about what the kind of clients that you currently work with. And do you work with both family law related family issues as well as business, or how does that work for your practice right now?
You know, for me right now, I have had a lot of course, in the past, intellectual property clients. I've shifted more and more over to a bit of a mix of family care and mediation, conflict resolution, and professional development and coaching. So I've got I've got these six buckets of services, right? So if we just think about a meeting with your lawyer and kind of come to a solution with something, I have a first step, which is an evaluating and kind of crafting an action plan. I've got a second step, which is a family care. And that's where I'm getting most of my clients in right now. So I'll focus right in on that. So, you know, we have to do adult things, right? Although we don't think of it too often, we put it aside. A lot of my clients right now are thinking about their wills, basic estate planning, right? So you've got your wills, you've got financial powers of attorney, and you've got advanced directives for healthcare. I've had a couple clients call up recently because of the pandemic and said, you know, I've been thinking about this a long time. I need to get these papers in place. It's part of adulting, right? It's part of being adults. And some people will say, well, I don't have enough of an estate. Well, if you have about a $3,000 or $4,000 worth of estate, you need to have something to cover, to protect, to give direction about your estate. And you have a body. We need to, I'm sorry to be so quite obvious, but all of us could wind up unavailable in a medically induced coma, unavailable to respond to our own healthcare needs. We need advanced directives for that kind of work. I'll give you a quick example. I'm embarrassed to say it publicly, but I'm a member of a motorcycling organization called IBA. So entry into the club is a 1,000-mile ride in under 24 hours.
Oh, wow.
Within that organization, I'm considered an extreme rider, having ridden more than 1,500 miles in under 24 hours.
Wow.
So I got a lot of time on two wheels. I enjoy two wheels. I was in a rush one day to get to Austin, Texas from Atlanta to attend a niece's high school graduation. I made two or three really poor decisions in about half a second and wound up splayed out on I-85 South at Opa-locka, Alabama.
Mm.
Miraculously, I got up and I walked away from that thinking cars were about to plow me down, when in fact, I'd been knocked unconscious. The cars had stopped. People were walking toward me. Point is, you just don't know. You don't know when you're going to go down. And that's when I decided, okay, I need to have an advanced directive for healthcare put in place right now, because, you know, I was not available to take care of my own healthcare. As much as I love two wheels, I'll tell you too, I do a little different risk analysis now, since I've had a couple of friends be hit and killed on motorcycles, as I've just had to back away from them for a while.
Right.
Though my wife signed up for better or for worse, there's no reason I should, make it worse if I don't have to. But we're all in lives that are busy. I was on my roof yesterday morning fixing a roof leak. I'm at the very edge of the roof. You know, I'm two stories up. I'm being cautious. I'm careful. I fixed the roof leak best I can tell, and I'm back down. Mm-hmm. But still, I know people have slipped off the roofs and suddenly they're incapacitated, and they need these kinds of adult documents to help run their lives. So I've got folks doing a lot of that these days. I've got a couple of people I'm coaching. They are CEOs and executives, and they like my style. So I tend to be to the point and cut through a lot of the facade that we put around ourselves, right? Because we need to get to who the person is and what drives them. Those are work I'm enjoying now. The business clients right now are very concerned about insurance coverage, commitments to employees. How do they navigate the current crisis? I've got a friend who's really engaged in that work right now. He's focusing on that. So I'm co-counseling with him when any of my clients have those kinds of questions and concerns. You know, insurance questions will be coming up. These kinds of things will be popping up that aren't for those who that's not already happening.
Sure. Yeah. And before we let you go, we do really need to speak to the current crisis we find ourselves in, here as we do this show on March 30th, we're obviously in an extraordinarily uncertain time that's causing stress on business owners, entrepreneurs with their business. It's also causing stress for families that are certainly cooped up together. you know, that maybe things were easier to deal with when they weren't cooped up together like they are now under shelter in place. You know, what advice do you give folks to make it through?
We're talking about emotional intelligence right now, John, and it's I think that's where we start anyway, place to start. And one of the phrases is empathy, right? So we've got to be empathetic with each other. We need to understand what the what our stresses are and what our anxieties are. And a lot of people are talking about empathy right now. I'd like to push us to the next step. And the next step is compassion. So I can be empathetic. You can be empathetic with me. I can be empathetic with you about being cooped up, being tied up, being anxious about the business. But that's just me putting myself in your shoes, you putting yourself in my shoes. And then we want to be kind to each other for sure, right? So there's that aspect. But the next level is compassion. We need to now take action behind that empathy. How can we help and journey with each other through this? We need to be patient. We need to show that concern and compassion for each other. That's what I would advise us to do as much as possible. My wife and I are working at home. Her office is right next door to my office, and she is on the phone quite a bit. I may have mentioned to you that she's actually at CDC. So her phones are literally, you know, burning up.
Right.
And she's on the phones from morning to late. I am in the room next door writing documents, and I've got my big earmuffs on, my gun earmuffs on. And it's the ones that you'll see the mechanics waving the planes in, you know, at the airport. These things are huge because I got to drown out that noise. I've got to be compassionate with what she's dealing with right now. I can't tell her to lower her voice, right?
Right.
It's this learning to work with each other. We will get through this. We absolutely will. I think for many of us, I think we'll be in a better place. Maybe we'll be reconnected with family. That's the thing to look for right now. I think how can we use this place to reconnect with family? How can we use this place to reconnect with our better businesses going forward? And what do we want our better businesses to look like? I think extensions of our better selves.
Wow, this has been great, Paul. I would love to keep going, but we've got to let you get back to the folks you work with. And if there's any one out there that has heard something that resonates with them and they'd like to get in touch, how would they get in touch with you?
Thanks, John. So my website domain is ubercouncil.com, one word, and that's UberCouncil.com, Uber Council. And I'll be glad to give my phone number out. It's 404-245-0957. That contact information is on my website. Also have a LinkedIn profile. Invite your listeners to connect with me. We need to build our networks and be there for each other, right? Wherever the right resources are, like you are. I appreciate and honor the fact that you've got this great work that you're doing, John. Thank you for being a voice for all of us.
Well, thank you, Paul, and thank you for being on. It's been great to have you. So thanks again.
Take care.
Folks, if you need help curing the headaches of administrative tasks, bookkeeping, marketing, presentations, maybe you've got any administrative issue that you need to get off your plate, well, go engage a smart and reliable office angel. They're not a temp agency or a placement firm. Office Angels matches your business support needs with angels who have the talent and experience necessary to fly in and help you maintain and grow your business. Your terms, your timeline. They lend a hand when needed, and then they fly off when that job is done. They've always worked virtually, folks, so check them out, officeangels.us. Call Chief Executive Angel S.E. Escobedo at 770-442-9246 to learn more. Folks, just a reminder that you can find our shows on all the major podcast platforms. That would include Apple, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, Overcast, iHeartRadio. Do I need to keep going? we are on all the major podcast apps. And so check us out there. North Fulton Business Radio is where you can search for us there. We'd love it if you'd subscribe to our shows and like us and support the work that we do to try to get the good word out for great business owners like Paul and that are doing great work out there. We're also on social media, of course, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook, North Fulton BRX. So for my guest, Paul Knowlton, I'm John Ray. Join us next time here on North Fulton Business Radio.